Today, we are joined by Sean Brennan, who is our CRA practice manager. So, Sean Brennan is Integrity 360's practice lead for cyber risk and assurance and has been delivering cyber risk and assurance consulting services to clients over the last decade and previously working in numerous technical roles. Sean holds a Bachelor of Sciences in both IT management and in networking and support. He's also an ISO 27001 lead auditor and lead implementer and is ISACA cybersecurity certified. So thanks for joining, Sean. And I'm Brian Martin, Director of Product Management here at Integrity 360. So today's conversation is about untangling compliance because we've seen a lot of regulation and new laws emerge in recent years, whether that be the NIS2 directive, which still hasn't been enacted in every country. We've got DORA, we have Cyber Resilience Act, the AI Act, and this can often lead to a complex maze that needs to be navigated by organizations to understand exactly what they need to comply with and how they need to comply, and making sense of all of that overlap and duplication that needs to be taken care of. So Sean is here today to uncomplicate all of this complexity that we're dealing with and help you navigate a way forward. So Sean, if you just move on to the next slide, please. So just before Sean, I hand over to Sean and kicks off, we just like to get a sense of the audience and where they're coming from. So, which of the following regulations and laws do you believe your organization should be complying with? And please select all the ones that apply. So, GDPR, NIS Directive, NIS2, DORA, EU Cybersecurity Act, EU AI Act, and PSD, Payment Services Directive. So, we're just going to give people a minute to answer the poll. And then we'll take a quick peek at the answer, and then we'll move on. And just while that's happening, I just want to mention a couple of things. Sean will present, but there will be time at the end for questions and answers, and we encourage and hope people will ask questions. So at the bottom of your screen, you should see the Q&A button, so you can enter your question via the Q&A section. And the other thing to mention is that there's functionality in the platform now to get captions translated. So if anybody has problems with our accents or understanding what we're saying, you can go down to the show captions section below the screen and turn on translated captions there if that makes your life easier as well. Okay, so before we move over to Sean, just to see the answer, which regulations and laws does the audience need to be compliant with? And what we can see here is GDPR, number one, at 98, pretty much almost everybody, 96%. And then in second place, we have EU Cybersecurity Act and the EU AI Act at 63%, NIS2 Directive at 59%, and even PSD is at a healthy 30%. So obviously, all of these regulations and laws highly applicable to everyone here today. So with that information in mind, over to you, Sean, to start your presentation.
Thank you, Brian. Hi all, and yes, again, welcome to our webinar on untangling compliance. There we go. Very good. Yes, so throughout this, I'm going to talk a bit about the key challenges I see with clients with an increasing number of regulations that we must align and comply with. I'll talk briefly about the different regulations, but not this isn't about getting into detail on any specific regulation. And I'll be working towards the end on the approach that we can take to really simplify things, to get a higher level of assurance on that we are complying with the numerous different regulations. So, in the cyber, talk about in the cyber industry or with cyber professionals, for quite some time, the mindset has been not if, but when we get hit. How can we manage a disruptive event, whether it's a security incident or even a physical or environmental disruption? And that mindset we can now see being more adopted through the regulations that are being implemented as we moved focus, I wouldn't say importance, but focus from the cybersecurity of protecting data to the operational resilience to ensure that we can maintain business operations through a disruptive event. We have mechanisms in place to manage incidents, disruption, but at the same time, be able to maintain our services out to our customers or citizens. We see, and it's becoming, we have DORA, we had NIS1 many years ago, and now we have NIS2. I think the biggest change, obviously, from NIS1 to NIS2 is the scope of industries that it now applies to. It's a huge, huge update where nearly all organizations in some way are coming in scope, whether you're critical, you're important, or a basic company within NIS2. So the reality is more and more organizations now need to comply with more than one regulation. I think for a long time, it may have been just GDPR. Which is going nowhere. It still needs to be complied with. But again, with specifically with that adoption around NIS2 and the DORA recently, it's a much bigger case now where organizations are facing numerous regulations and the challenges that come with that. This can cause friction, which is increased by inconsistent adoption and timelines, and even with guidance across member states. So I suppose again, we've got to talk about the NIS2 directive. Across Europe, we're seeing much more adoption now in terms of putting it into law. However, a number of countries are still to do this, and Ireland being one of those too. Also, the difference guidance being a directive and it's the member states up to the member states to implement and provide guidance to organizations on how to comply with this. The different guidance across member states where an organization may operate in multiple different jurisdictions can increase that friction. And then across these regulations, then you have different reporting timelines. For DORA, NIS2, you have different reporting timelines, you have different authorities to report to. So yeah, all these regulations, the challenge as well with regulations, we still need to maintain from a lot of organizations, we need to maintain ISO certificates, maybe SOC 2 Type 2, Cyber Essentials, Cyber Essentials Plus, PCI requirements. It's a maze, a tangle of requirements to align with and to get that confidence and assurance that we are meeting those. So we have a spaghetti bowl of convergence, and there is a lot of overlap across these regulations and these frameworks. With DORA, for the financial sector and NIS2 critical entities infrastructure, it's now business as usual. And the key challenge that I see from clients over probably the last year or that we talk about is the audit fatigue that this creates. because we're looking at regulations in silo, and we've a number of audits, whether internal, external, and it is creating a resource kind of intensive environment, which is taking up a lot of time. We're testing multiple times for different audits. Again, a lot of companies are, ISO certified or SOC 2 and Cyber Essentials. So the audit fatigue is really setting in. We need to adopt a more efficient way to manage compliance and alignment and approach to these newer audits. There is quite a large overlap between these standards, frameworks, and regulations. And this is across security, privacy, and AI now, the AI EU AI Act. And there's overlap and there's dependency between them. We've also had the saying, can't have privacy without security. So we just need to think of a way, a better approach to understanding the overlap and how we can simplify our compliance and assurance. The data layer, so with GDPR, it remains a governing regime for personal data. And we also have the Data Act, which is introducing an overlap on obligations for non-personal data. So we keep seeing these overlaps and requirements, but their scope of the organizations for each one may be different, and the key objectives could slightly differ. We also, that overlap that I mentioned earlier, some of the key differences, I suppose, between regulations is around incident reporting. Now, if you're under a number of regulations, EU or member state, or even outside the EU, if you're a public company in on this sector authority oversight. We have different reporting timelines. We have different authorities we must report to, and we have different timelines on continual reporting. We have the initial reporting, we have the follow-up with the lessons learned, reporting requirements, and these differ. These are probably the key difference between the regulations at a detail kind of detailed level. Okay. So we'll come up with sorry, just one note as well, actually. One thing is that I like to enforce is everything always comes back to risk. These regulations are here for a good reason. It's to protect data, so the people, the end consumer. That is the end goal, to protect end consumers and citizens of each country. But everything always comes back to risk. The regulations are there to enforce the risk management, that organizations are taking proactive risk management measures. I emphasize a lot on risk management. Everything we do, every person that we hire, every technology we acquire, every process we implement is to remediate or mitigate a identified risk and associated threat. So I may talk about risk quite a bit through this. Okay. Oh, excuse me. Apologies, one moment. Sorry, Brian, can you see that? I clicked the wrong button
Yep,
there.
it's there now, yeah.
So just another quick poll, if we could quickly answer, is how confident are you in your organization's alignment with such regulations? How confident are you even aware of gaps and a assurance that you align with requirements that are enforced or will be enforced soon? So if you just take a moment to answer that, that'd be great. Okay, thank you. So the results are the highest, fairly confident, which is great to see, at 48%. Then the next tied is very confident, 22%, somewhat unconfident, 22%, and not confident at all, which is 7%. So good to see the fairly confident 48%, probably over the last year or more. Organizations have been taking proactive measures to ensure alignment with laws that are coming into force, or regulations, or directives. Thank you. So the AI factor, it's been here for some time now, but AI came from non-existing to into everything that we do, nearly. It sprung out of nowhere. I recall when OpenAI's ChatGPT first came, and its adoption was just massive, which presented a whole new threat that we needed to get on top of to manage, ensure that we're using AI responsibly, and the data leakage and risks and the risk to data subjects. But we do see the AI is a business enabler. Any organization that is not embracing AI into their business processes will lose that competitive advantage. Unfortunately, though, AI is also an enabler for our threat actors, making their processes more efficient and more advanced and sophisticated. We have the EU AI Act in place, where we need to understand what AI we're using and for what business processes and what level of risk, and then what we must do to manage that risk, what actions we need to take to identify and manage and either understand whether it's a process we cannot rely on AI to take to ensure the rights of individuals and ensure the around bias. The integration challenge. So AI isn't just an IT issue, compliance, legal, and very importantly, an ethical one. Uncontrolled use remains a top compliance blind spot. With shadow IT, and now we've shadow AI. So, in a lot of cases, when we acquire new products, a lot of SaaS applications with businesses acquire, it may even not be apparent visibly that some of these products, it's not visually apparent that they're using AI, but in the background, when you read the conditions of using one of these SaaS products, you may find that there is an AI element being utilized in the background. And this causes a risk that we need to be able to manage. Shadow AI, we need to understand and manage how these applications are used, just like shadow IT, of course, an organization. That starts with governance and oversight and putting in place a Yeah, enforcing it through policy and using technical measures to put that policy in place. So a lot of organizations at this stage have AI policy, and they may have AI governance committees. So we see this bottleneck where organizations don't know also where AI belongs. Is it a DPO, the CISO, or if there's a new head of AI? Ultimately, it's shared responsibility, for the privacy and security perspective. And governing AI can fit well into existing committees or design authorities to ensure that when we are acquiring a product or service, we understand the AI functionality and the risks that come from that, from those different perspectives, from the privacy, from the security areas. So AI is not just a recent threat, it's probably one of our greatest now, that we need to be able to manage. Then we've new risks. So new model poisoning and adversarial attacks are now regulated risks. So threat actors have different approaches to exploiting AI applications. And a lot of this again is through the supply chain. And there are new best practices to testing and identifying risk in AI applications. So we need to adopt a different approach to managing the number of different regulations, the certificates that we maintain. The idea is we want to reduce the effort at the same very same time gain assurance. We want to reduce that audit fatigue. We want to go to a place where we're getting continued assurance, continued compliance. Again, I mentioned the audit fatigue, key challenge I've seen from clients, and how we can reduce that so that we can test once and comply many. It's a resource drain on compliance teams. Again, the different reporting timelines and who's going to report and what times to what authorities, and focusing on compliance lists rather than the actual risk posture. Again, all comes back to risk. If there is an area that it's is a gap and it's not compliant with, it needs to go through your enterprise risk management framework and understand the level of risk and what we can do to lower or take treatment actions. So from silos to unified assurance, so how do we untangle all of this and stop you treating regulations on their own standalone projects? And we need to get to a unified control framework. We want to test once, comply many. So essentially, we want to look at the frameworks and where they overlap, so that we're not duplicating effort. This comes back. I'll talk a bit about designing your own framework to meet the requirements across these different regulations. We want to standardize definitions across the board and integrate GRC tooling away from spreadsheets. This is quite different from more earlier in my career as consulting, performing risk assessments. It wasn't so often, or it was quite rare, where I would specifically recommend that you implement a GRC tool. The return on investment just wasn't there. But now, as we have numerous regulations, and again, you need to maintain, and in a lot of cases, companies need to maintain their Cyber Essentials, Cyber Essentials Plus, ISO SOC 2. Tooling is a way of to unify this and get a clear view of compliance and continued assurance. On the bottom here, this is an image that actually I remember seeing maybe a decade ago. I was looking for it again last night. I think kind of gives you a visual, good visual representation of the different frameworks and their level of coverage or detail. Not every framework is the same in detail. You can see on the left here, NIST Cybersecurity Framework, the CSF. It is a high-level framework. It's meant to be a baseline to work upon that you and reference other more detailed kind of publications to gain understanding and guidance on how to implement control requirements. You know, and we work our way down to NIST, the low baseline of 853, ISO 27002 specifically, SysTop 20. This is a little out of date, I'll admit, SysA18. Again, to NIST 800 moderate, NIST 800 high, right down to the CSF, the Secure Controls Framework. The Secure Controls Framework, I think it's underutilized within the industry. It is a fantastic workbook that you can download from their website if you simply just Google. It is a comprehensive set of controls mapping across a lot of regulations, standards, and frameworks, not just for security, not just for privacy, not just for AI. It goes into quality, into service management. So it is therefore a list of, I believe, 1,200 controls. Again, not specifically for security, but I'm a big believer in it. It assists you in the cross-mapping between the regulations and the standards and frameworks, PCI, ISO, and is a very useful tool to start building your own custom framework. At this point in time, no single framework is the same for every company. It depends on your regulatory requirements, your certificates, your risk appetite. So I would encourage you to take a look at that. It can be very useful. When you open it, it's not just about the standards and frameworks. It will help you map the threats to the specific control that control helps you to remediate. And yeah, it's very useful. In saying that, we can use other frameworks as a starting point. We can use NIST. Fine. If we actually look at NIST, a lot of the guidance from member states maps is mapped back to NIST as the baseline. And we see that with Ireland adopting Belgium CIFON or Belgium Cyber Fundamentals. We also have in Ireland the security baselines all come back to NIST's cybersecurity framework. CIFON is very useful as well. It brings NIST to a more detailed level. And yeah, glad to see Ireland, the NCSC adopt that as guidance. And it would be good to see other member states adopt that as well so that we can kind of get clarity across the board and some or consistency across member states. So yeah, you want to, when you select your framework as a baseline, you want to understand your regulatory requirements, what regulations are in scope, and you want to start mapping the regulatory requirements against your baseline framework. There's going to be a huge amount of overlap, but areas, again, there are going to be some differences, some specific differences. And these areas, you know, we could have an area like incident response, where we need to split that incident response up into two requirements, two control requirements for DORA or for NIS2 or for GDPR. Your framework serves as the basis. That is the design. It's not something just to measure against. It is a way to design your whole information kind of security framework. That is the starting point for me, is creating that custom framework that is appropriate for your organization. And then it filters down through policy and such. Integrate again the GRC tooling. Once when we build this framework, we want to get to a point where it's we do a gap assessment point in time, we understand alignment, and then we get to implementing it, and then we have audits. But audits are after the fact. There may be some anxiety about when an audit comes up because it's been 6 months before we had an audit, or it's been 3 months. I'm not 100% confident, or I don't have visibility. Sorry, is probably the best word to say. Don't have visibility of how well we've performed through that time. And GRC tooling can help you move to a more continued approach to assurance, or moving from day one to day two. There are a huge amount of GRC tools out there now, and I'm not going to name any. I think it is a decade of SaaS products, especially around GRC. What I say is, don't jump on any GRC tool. Understand what you're looking to achieve, and the specific requirements or capabilities you would want out of a tool, and go out, look at maybe three or four, and document your requirements from a tool, provide it to that SaaS owner, and see what they can meet, what they can't meet. What are the must-haves, what are the nice-to-haves, to get to a point where a GRC tool fits your organization. Just to sum up on that, it's about we want to create our custom frameworks now. We want to meet the requirements of the regulations that are appropriate to you. So, in terms of approach, I think this is where you can take some value here in terms of what we can actually do. Again, we want to build that custom framework, one harmonized control set map to required regulations. Pick a baseline framework, whether it's an SCSF or you go right down to the security controls framework. You want to map the controls against the different control requirements in the regulations, understand where there's overlap, understand where the differences are. And you want to have that detailed out throughout the framework. This custom framework then needs to feed into, you need to be able to enforce it. So you need to design your policies. So it is good to be able to, on your framework, to have a column as well, where you can say it's defined through policy, and understand where what areas may not be defined through policy. Policy should be is a set of mandatory requirements. It's your design. These are the minimum requirements we need to meet to comply with our framework, which is based on our different regulations. One thing about policies, I do see a lot through audits, a lot of the use of word should in policies. And my advice is to refrain from that wording. It's not black and white. I understand in cases you may use the term should. But should is, it's not enforceable, it's not auditable, it's a guidance statement. So it's not really for policy level where we want to meet. Document the mandatory specific requirements, and then it goes feeds your way down through your standards, your more detailed documents and your procedures, your processes, procedures, your guidelines, your run books. Who owns then? Ownership is governance is a key important thing in the framework. We want to understand as well what controls are owned by whom. And there may be multiple owners to a control because you may have different infrastructures. You may have a Azure environment, you may have an AWS, production environment, and the responsibilities across two different teams. So there can be multiple owners to say single controls. And we want to understand a way we can measure the effectiveness. So putting SLAs and metrics in place for each control requirement. So the continuous assurance, this is the piece where we want to move from day one, point in time, to day two, gaining that continued assurance and confidence that you meet the requirements. There's an order coming up. You already know we've met the requirements. So there's no kind of anxiety around or panic around an internal or external audit that's coming up. This needs to be tech driven, again, through tooling. And so it's not the same for every organization, depends on size, but it is becoming more bigger enabler through technology now. It really depends on, actually, one good point is, the budgeting for tooling can be different. But I would say at a minimum, okay, maybe you don't have the budget for a ServiceNow capability or any of these tools. But look what you have and what you can utilize. So for clients I've worked with, we were able to capitalize just on their ticketing, their IT ticketing system, to automate the notification of a specific requirement in the control, whether that be you have an access review coming up and assigning that ticket to the application owners. They get early notification. You need to complete access reviews for X application, and then a mandatory upload of that review to be able to close down. So you don't have to jump on buying a new technology. I would always recommend look at what you have first. But you want to get to a point where you have a technology that is configured correctly against your policy requirements, timeline set, control owners assigned, and evidence requirements, details, and mandatory uploading of such. This should all feed then back into a very simple single dashboard with showing you where you've met or not met certain requirements. Maybe access review has not been complete. That allows you then to drill down and do your root cause analysis. You may see, oh, that control owner left the organization 3 weeks ago. This should have been updated with a new control owner. So it quickly allows you to identify any non-compliance and get to a state where you're continually getting evidence uploaded. These tools are also great when you have these continuous uploads of evidence. You've automated evidence collection through APIs, collecting sample logs, where they allow an auditor, whether it's an external audit for ISO, for SOC 2, Cyber Essentials, if they're an internal audit where they're doing an audit on DORA, or an authority to it coming in doing an audit on DORA or a specific regulation. Allows them to come into one area where the evidence is already there. And depending on the audit type, you already have your control, your different regulations mapped to the different areas and the evidence required. So that's where we want to get to an approach where it's reducing that audit fatigue and enable a more efficient way to demonstrating compliance and assurance. So we fewer duplicate audits, faster audit reporting, and stronger assurance. A lot of these audit companies now are external certification bodies are even providing these kind of tools themselves to enable them to come in and reduce the effort greatly on the company. Okay. Would note as well, just if there's areas where you find, I think I noted on earlier, where you can't fulfill a policy requirement or framework requirement, regulatory requirement, anything like that. You identify a gap, it needs to be associated risk, needs to go through your ERM or your enterprise risk management framework. Again, everything comes back to ERM. The enterprise level, what's the regulatory risk, the financial risk, reputational, do see organizations where they have multiple different frameworks. They have an ERM, and cyber have one, and different departments may have their own. But the best approach is to adopt the enterprise-wide risk management framework. So you have consistency in terms of what risk means to the organization. So in closing, just map the convergence. So not just a gap analysis, specifically looking for where you don't comply, but where the overlap is, to reduce the efforts. Consolidate governance. So merge, your cyber risk, privacy, or AI governance committees where possible. Again, there's a lot of dependency between them, and they should all be working in conjunction to achieve a common kind of objective or goal for the organization. Enablement through continual insurance and confidence, and reduce audit fatigue through the different tools that are available. And the supply chain triage, so reevaluate vendors based on their aggregate risk. It's a point I probably didn't should bring up enough, was about where third-party risk management or supply chain risk has been quite a focus area for a long time now. But we want to reduce the effort, both through like the procurement, when we go to procurement and we're reaching out to four or five third parties, and they're asked to fill a cyber questionnaire. A week later, then they're asked to do this privacy questionnaire, and then they're asked for this AI questionnaire. It's to bring those all together, make it a more efficient and simplified process for both you and the vendors that you're looking to looking for services. It can be off-putting for some vendors where the workload is just not worth the ROI for going with the tender. Okay, thank you all. I hope you've taken some notes from that. I'll just hand over to Brian.
Thank you very much, Sean, for the illuminating presentation. Interesting to see we have a new term now in cybersecurity called audit fatigue. And we've been talking about alert fatigue for quite a long time. But with the advent of all these new overlapping regulations, audit fatigue is now becoming a thing. But through some of the advice that Sean has spoken about, having a consolidated framework to help you navigate and deduplicate the same way we deduplicate alerts. We deduplicate the controls required across these multiple frameworks to help us navigate that and be more effective. And I think it was interesting the poll at the start, Sean, where you talk where we saw that, I think over 60% were either fairly or highly confident in their ability to satisfy these requirements. But I think the thrust here is, beyond just compliance to also being of, effective and making sure that, you can do it economically as well and in a controlled manner. And I think ideas you mentioned, such as, leaning on the SCF to help do that mapping and build your own custom framework and cascading your controls into policies and procedures. Once rather than multiple times, then really what can help you navigate that complexity as well. So we're going to go to the Q&A now. I see some questions have come in. Can I ask anybody who has a question who hasn't submitted yet to please put it in the Q&A section? And just while people are doing that, just to give you some information about upcoming events and webinars. So on the 11th of February, so next week, we've got a webinar on combating ransomware 3.0 in 2026. So very interesting topic as ransomware evolves. So please follow the QR code and you'll be able to register for that and any other upcoming events. And also just to highlight our flagship conference schedule coming up. Starting in London on the 3rd of March. As you can see, we're coming to many different locations, across Europe, Africa, Caribbean, and so you can follow the QR code to register for the event in your region, and where you'll have a day packed with insights, information, and learning, and all of the attendance does qualify for continual professional development credits as well. Okay, with that being said, though, let's move on to the Q&A section. And first question, Sean, is around the EU AI Act. So I think there's a bit of confusion around the AI Act. Does it apply to everybody or just to organizations who are like publishing AI applications? So if the question is, if my organization doesn't develop or publish our own AI applications, are we out of scope for the AI Act?
Okay, I think the wording in the actual regulation is if you deploy, so it doesn't have to be something that you're providing out to the public as a product. It's if you're even if you're deploying it internally, it's about the level of risk of using that AI capability for a specific process. So is it a high risk, medium risk, low risk? It could be. Are you trying to use AI that may impact a data subject and their rights, or that decision could impact their future? So no, it may apply to you. It's not just about developing products with AI functionality and providing them externally. It's also about deploying internally in the business processes. You're using the AI for.
Yeah, and as we know, deploying an AI application could be as simple as buying a subscription to a SaaS product that your organization uses, or potentially even the use of shadow AI within the organization that you may be unaware of, and some of that information being misused with those applications. Hence the, I think you mentioned in your presentation around one of the emerging burning controls that we're seeing, and I'm seeing as well from other customers, is how do we control the usage of AI within the organization, but either sanctioned or unsanctioned as well.
And there's tools there. I worked with a client where they had Microsoft Defender, which can show you what AI usage has been used. You can set policies to block certain ones or everything. But it's about having that process, that design authority, oversight about when you're acquiring a AI product or an AI enabled product, what it's going to be used for. And the risks associated with that.
So the next question that's come in, and this would be great if there was, if there was an answer to this. Is there one standard or regulation that if we follow it, we comply with all the rest?
Simple answer is no. Complying with a standard, so if we talk about like ISO 27001. It's a head start. If you're ISO 27001 certified and you align with the requirements, it's a head start. But it does not mean you comply with a specific regulation. You can, again, understand the overlap, but understand gaps and requirements. So, no, there's no one standard regulation. The different regulations as well apply to different industries, or they may have a different objective. But yeah, no, in short, there's no one
Yeah.
that. You can apply with the rest.
Yeah, I think what I understand as well, if you take like DORA and NIS2, for example, depending on what type of entity you are, like if you're a financial entity, then DORA is prime, if you like. But in some cases, the standards have equivalent controls, but some are more stringent than others. So it just, yeah, it seems to all depend on context. Hence the utility of the likes of the SCF. That maps all that out, and does include mappings for the likes of DORA and NIS2. So I think you got to see it as a kind of a complicated Venn diagram more than one that kind of covers all the rest, if you like. And then the Last question from the chat is, the Cyber Resilience Act is obviously targeted at organizations to improve resilience within the EU. Could you just follow that, and could that provide a useful blueprint for improving our resilience, or do we need to think wider than that?
Well, the Cyber Resilience Act, that's the around product and digital elements. So again, these regulations also have different objectives in terms of the scope of what they're trying to achieve and around what. Is it around privacy, AI? Is it around developing products for sharing externally? But does it provide a good blueprint? Any of these regulations can provide a good blueprint, but the blueprint I really believe is starting with a baseline framework. That's an understanding risk. So performing a risk assessment, understanding the requirements and regulations that feed in developing your own custom framework. So I think the for improving resilience, start with baseline framework, understand the regulations feed into that. Your risk assessment should feed into that, and you will have designed a quite comprehensive and framework specific for your organization.
And if you were to advise on, I know that it's context specific, but is there one baseline framework that is the most used or has the most utility to as a starting point?
I think NIST CSF is the most commonly used, certainly is. Again, I spoke about it earlier. Even member states or the authorities or the bodies stood up to assist in protecting infrastructure or whatever it might be in the company or in the state are aligning back to NIST CSF. So that's probably the most commonly I see. Again, picking the right framework for you. So, maybe designing your own framework is further down the line for a specific organization. Maybe NIST CSF again. Maybe that's not the starting point for you. It depends on different your organization, where you are currently. CIS 18 is a very good just practical set of areas to implement to impede, I believe, 80% of the threats out there, depending on what level you're going to. So no single framework will be suit an organization. Depends on, each individual.
And in your practice, Sean, leading the CRA practice with Integrity 360, are you seeing a lot of demand from clients to assist them in choosing baseline frameworks or doing that custom mapping to enable them to navigate the complexity of the overlapping requirements?
Yeah, we're seeing a lot more of this, designing a custom framework. We've always, when clients come to us and they want to perform, we want to do a gap assessment. We know we've seen this, we've seen ISO. We spend a little bit of time on a meeting and a workshop to understand what fits best. It's quick to get to that point where we know what standard regular or what standard and framework will suit that organization best. The designing the framework, designing a custom framework is we see a lot more, and we're doing a lot more of that now. I do remember one thing I know, like I remember, I see firms, design their own framework for their clients. It's a branded framework, which has always bothered me because, who are we to design a framework? Our own custom framework that will suit all our clients when you have the likes of NIST CSF, where tens of thousands of hours have been put in by hundreds of the best cyber professionals in the industry, develop it and go out to public consultation about it and get feedback. So, if you want to start off, pick a well-known industry recognized framework If you're more mature and you have a lot of rights to your oversight, get to a stage where you're designing your own framework that is best suited for you.
We just have time for one more question, which just came in from Henry. And I know you mentioned earlier you weren't going to name GRC tooling, etc. But
Yeah.
even if you could name a few that could potentially be in a shortlist, which applications are the best for compliance assessment, including cross-referencing NIST, ISO, NIS2, and any recommendations you might have?
Yeah, so these tools, generally all of them have these frameworks and regulations in it, in them there for cross-referencing. No one will fit any. Some are quite a bit more expensive than others. Like some of the names, I suppose you've ISMS Online, which we've used quite a bit. You've other companies out there like Drata, Vanta, Sprinto. What I would recommend is, Henry, if you would like to reach out, there's like 30 minutes to understand what might help or suit you best. But again, if you are going to select one of these, is to set what your mandatory requirements are and what the NICE has, and then pick three or four of the industry recognized ones and go through that. But I'd be happy to have a quick call to discuss in more detail, Henry, if you like.
Thanks, Sean. And it remains just to thank everyone for attending today. Thank you for your time. And please follow up if you have any further questions that we can help you with. Have a good day. Bye now.
Thank you all.